Hello and welcome to another episode of Climate Talk Uganda, where we delve into the pressing issues of climate change and its impact on our lives. I'm your host, Josephine Karungi, and today we have in the studio Dr. Didikus Namanya, the climate and health focal point in the Environment Department of the Ministry of Health. From his title, you might have guessed that we are changing gears to look at health and how it comes into play in climate change conversations. Dr. Namanya has been at the forefront of Uganda's efforts to adapt our health systems to the challenges posed by climate change. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio, Doctor.
Thank you very much, Josephine, for this opportunity.
I know you have very little time, so I just want to get straight into it, but I'm very curious. You're a health geographer and focal point climate change and health and GIS, which I'm assuming is Geographic Information Systems Analyst. What does your role look like?
As you mentioned, geography is very broad. It has all the determinants of health. If you talk of the environment in terms of the natural environment, vegetation, water, soils, we used to call them biophysical environment. And now we talk about climate. Climate is part of the human environment. All these affect health. Where we live, where we work, where we you're educated affects our health. If you live near a dump site, which produces a lot of pollution, you'll definitely suffer from some kind of pollution-related impacts. So geography is health geography affects or is supportive of the health system. That's why I'm there. So I do mapping, public health mapping, which deals with the mapping indicators of health, geographically to show where the problem is, where performance is. I also map health facilities. We produced the first ever National Health Facility Atlas, which looks at the distribution of the health infrastructure in the whole country, looking at the different levels of the health infrastructure, from the topmost national referral facilities to the lowest health center too, and of course the village health teams. We have mapped all that. The blood banks, we have mapped all that. It is in one atlas, which helps managers of health to plan and to be able to deliver services effectively.
So we're going to get a bit more into that. Is this what you always wanted to do? Well, I see a bit of grey, so I know that we are much older, but yeah. When you were younger, was this a thing on your mind?
I have a very revealing story. When I joined university for my first year, I was given sociology, history and political science, and geography. But I wanted to remove geography from the subjects and go for social sciences because my elder brothers had done social work and social administration. You know, my career, it's very hard to change. Mm. So I attempted, filled in the forms to remove geography. But I didn't succeed. So at the end of first year, I performed best geography. And I decided to do at that time what we called 311. That is specializing in, I dropped all the rest and did geography alone. So from that time, I started enjoying geography. And up till now, with climate change as a major impacting on health, I'm still enjoying that trend of my career.
I see no regret on your face.
Absolutely.
We were speaking earlier before we came into the room, and you mentioned the first National Health Facility Atlas. And I know you spoke a little about it right now. Could you just give us a bit of detail? What does it entail? Can you help me understand how this works?
Now, the first ever National Health Facility Atlas was a necessity because you cannot plan for infrastructure which you don't know where it is. In other words, it's the science of where. What is where? Because when you know what is where, then you are able to take decisions in the right way. So it started basically with doing what we call geomapping. We must locate all the health infrastructure using a GPS, global positioning system. We captured this 2019-20 financial years were affected by COVID-19. But when COVID-19 phased out, we completed that, especially in the central region. Now, with all this information which we captured, showing the location, that is the key bit of the information, the level, the name of the health facility, the ownership, and the authority. Those are the key variables that we picked for each health facility that we got a coordinate. We cleaned this information using with other stakeholders like UBOS, like WHO, and others. And we worked through several phases to draft this atlas until we launched it, I think, 2 years ago. It was launched by the minister, and it is being used by different health managers across the country. Not only health managers, even politicians can use it, even researchers can use it to understand the health system. We are due to update it because things change. Levels, for instance, change. It's a policy of the government that we upgrade all health center twos to health center threes to provide better services. So that is ongoing, so we need to capture that information and update the atlas.
When we think about climate change, now putting on your geography hat, your health hat as well, what is that relationship? What does it look like? We've been speaking heavily on this podcast about how climate change affects agriculture, how it affects infrastructure and so on. How does it affect our health system?
Now, it affects climate change, as the name sounds. This is the long-term change in the average of key climate elements. We talk of precipitation, we talk of temperature, we talk of humidity. We can talk of other things like cloud cover and so on. But if this changes, this average over 30 years changes, then we are talking of climate change. But what we are largely experiencing, in addition to this change in climate, is what we call climate variability. In other words, the climate for this year may vary from the climate of last year and the next year. It may be we experience more climate extremes, weather extremes, like heavy rains, windstorms, hailstorms, floods, and so on. So these impact indeed on our health. How do they do it? When temperatures increase, you mentioned to me you come from Kabale. Kabale used to be called the Switzerland of Uganda, if you remember that. And why was it called the Switzerland of Uganda? Because the temperatures were very cold. Now, Kabale, the temperatures have warmed up. We didn't used to have malaria there. It used to be part of the malaria-free zones. Mount Elgon area, Bugis region, and Kigezi region. In the 60s and 50s, there were no malaria. But now we have malaria. You can testify to that. We have a lot of malaria. Why? Because the temperatures have warmed up, and they allow the multiplication of malaria parasites. So in Kabale, actually, we have epidemics because the people were not used to malaria. They have no immunity. You know, when you are bitten by a mosquito, you get malaria, the body builds immunity. So the people in Kigezi didn't have that immunity. They are now building the immunity. So that's one way climate change affects health. Beyond that, infrastructure. You have mentioned infrastructure. Kilembe Hospital, you know that in the past like 3 years, when River Nyamwamba flooded, it washed away that hospital in a matter of like 2 hours. That's impact on health infrastructure. We have had health infrastructure like Butiawa on Lake Albert, which was completely flooded. We have had health facilities in Bududa, in Wulambuli districts, completely washed away by landslides. That's impact on health systems. Now, mental health. The people who are affected by these impacts of landslides, they have killed the whole family. Imagine you lose your whole family and you remain. You are depressed and you are mentally disturbed. The health workers who treat these injured people, they have that permanent impact on their mental health. Let's talk about agriculture. When there is drought and crops are destroyed, this impacts on nutrition. Nutrition is a health indicator. Okay? So if we go beyond, like maternal and child health is also affected. Pregnant mothers, when it has flooded, they cannot cross the river to go for services, for immunization. All these are health-related impacts which are posed by climate change. We can go on and on and on. I can give another example. When the river Katonga was washed away, the referrals from Western Uganda coming to Kampala to the National Referral Hospitals had to go through Sembabule. It's longer. Somebody could die on the way in the ambulance. So all those are impacts of climate change.
You know, when you are speaking about disease,
yeah,
which is when somebody says how climate change affects health, the immediate thought is diseases, right? And I was just remembering that when the rain started recently, flu, what people are now saying is what, influenza?
Influenza, yeah.
Mm.
Respiratory diseases, yeah.
So we see a rise in things like that with the changing climate.
Yeah. Yes, the climate, there is climate health determinism, if I may frame it like that, or environmental determinism, which whereby we have environmental factors affecting health. Another good example is when we have drought, we have high temperatures, it is associated with meningitis. Meningitis is a big disease that affects the brain and it can affect. It can be more prevalent during the dry season and other respiratory tract infections.
Are we seeing any rise in meningitis? I know we learnt about it when we were in school, but you don't hear it spoken about often.
Well, I don't have the information to show that it has increased or not, but I know it is associated with drought and high temperatures. And in Uganda, we are experiencing those heat waves. In March and February, we had very strong high temperatures. In some regions like northern Uganda, we had temperatures over 35 degrees Celsius, and those affect the body, and they affect other outcomes, health outcomes.
If you're thinking about Uganda today and what we've just been seeing, the high temperatures and, you know, now the flooding that we see and so on, what are most pressing health issues that are linked to climate change?
Now, the most pressing issues are related to our plan, the priorities. I think you mean the priorities.
Mm.
We have 10 components of our climate change health national adaptation plan. They cut across the different building blocks of the health system. They talk about leadership, transformative leadership and governance. We want to make sure that the leaders, the health managers, are aware about climate change, the way I've articulated it, and so be able to plan for this challenge. Because, as I've mentioned, if a hospital can be washed away in a matter of hours, we need to be aware of this and plan. So that is one component. It's a priority that we have our leaders aware and supportive. And I'm very happy to report in the Ministry of Health, our leadership is very supportive of the climate change. Our minister, our permanent secretary, they are very supportive. They have joined us in these global conferences like the COPs, and they have been pushing for support, for resources to support our health system. So that is a plus as far as we're concerned. Number two.
Before you go to number two, when you say supportive, our leaders are supportive, and then we're thinking about COP and thinking about pushing for policy and thinking about pushing for resources, what else does that support look like?
Financing.
Beyond financing.
Let me explain.
Okay.
Let me explain, because you can not do any work they're like implementing this plan without financing. Actually, financing is one of the key components of this plan, that we mobilize for resources to educate, to build climate resilient health infrastructure, to have contingency plans in case of emergencies, climate change emergencies. All those are very relevant to have to build a resilient health system. And you had talked of priorities, and I had mentioned policy and governance. But health workforce, we want to build a climate smart health workforce, because the health workers are the ones who deliver on health services. So they need to know, they need to build within their plans and budgets elements of climate change. Otherwise, they will be surprised, and they will not be able to respond effectively to the risks we have mentioned earlier on. We have research. We need to do research, homegrown research. Much of the climate change research is presented in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC. And each 5 years, they produce a big report, and health is a big component. But much of this literature in this report is from the developed countries. So we need to build our indigenous research to support our systems, our decisions, not picking research from Canada, from Europe, from US. So that is very important.
You had opened the page in that book that you have that shows the different priorities. If you could just open it again.
Yeah.
Right. So if I'm getting you right, Dr. Namanya, success for us for this plan in 5 years, so it's 2025 to 2030, would look like component one, climate transformative leadership and governance. Mm. It would look like a climate smart health workforce.
Correct.
It would look like vulnerability, capacity and adaptation assessment. What does that mean? And when you say vulnerability, I've always wondered, who do we consider vulnerable?
Vulnerable.
When we think about climate change and health.
Me and you are vulnerable.
It's very hard to think about me and you when, you
know, I'm coming.
We have cars, we are going to drive to the hospital. We don't live in Kabale anymore on a day-to-day.
It depends how you define vulnerability.
Yeah.
Now, you say you have a car. You know, a few weeks ago when it flooded in Kampala, would you cross? So you are vulnerable, very vulnerable. Thank you very much. So we are vulnerable in different ways. The communities, of course, the rural communities are more vulnerable, but we are all vulnerable.
Yeah.
When there's no food, when the infrastructure is destroyed, you cannot use the hospital. So that means you are vulnerable. When your family is completely wiped away through landslides, we are vulnerable. You are from Kabale. Landslides are very common in Kabale. You find some homes are completely washed away, households, people killed.
The climate does not know your pocket.
It doesn't know that language. It knows how to destroy. And in a way, it is the reaction of the environment because of our human indiscriminate destruction to the environment. We have destroyed all the wetlands. We have cut down all the forest. We have destroyed the river banks. So the environment is also reacting and telling us, slow down, conserve the environment, protect the environment, which is vulnerable. So you had asked about vulnerability. So briefly, that's what vulnerability is about. But we want the districts to do their district-specific vulnerabilities. What we did was national. So we need each district because they are in different environments, geographically.
They're affected differently.
So each district is supposed to do a district-specific vulnerability and adaptation assessment and use that information to develop a plan, a district climate change adaptation plan.
So the reason I wanted us to talk about the vulnerabilities, which you've really explained by saying you and me, is that often people assume vulnerable people are what we have largely categorized as vulnerable. Poor communities, people in the slum areas or people in rural areas with no access to this and that. But just to know that all of us climate change will make us all vulnerable when we don't think we are. So then another area that we're looking at and saying this is our measure of success, if we have climate resilient infrastructures, technologies and supply chain.
Correct.
Management of environmental determinants of health, a climate informed health program, climate related emergency preparedness and management. Yes. How are we doing on climate related emergency preparedness?
Now,
health-wise,
in the ministry, we have established it's called Medical Emergency Department. It's a whole department managing the ambulance system in the country. And you know, when there is a flood, when there are landslides in Bududa, the ministry is the first MD to be called to respond, to take contingency medication, to take responses to that region. So that department is in charge of that. But that is reacting to the emergence, climate emergence. Now we have a whole department dealing with surveillance. Surveillance is like predicting, being able to detect. And now with the environmental department also, we are working together with the Department of Meteorological Services to pick climate data, for instance, precipitation, temperature, humidity, which determine, for instance, whether we shall get heavy rains, whether we shall get a heat wave, and then we are able to predict what we call forecasts. Get these forecasts, and we are integrating this within the health management information systems. We are still at pilot level. To be able to know in 2 months we shall be experiencing heavy rains in this region. So we should be prepared to plan and prepare to respond to this. Maybe take contingency medicines, maybe alert the health workers, you know, things to be prepared beyond just reactionary kind of response.
What do your information systems look like for communities? So if you know this is what's going to happen in this region, with your collaboration with the Met Department, is it Met Authority now?
Yeah.
Okay. When you know that, what is the ministry doing in terms of information to the public?
To the communities.
And the general public. To just say, listen, this is happening, be prepared for this.
So, of course, we have the bulletins for the educated, me and you, which we share on our website, which people can read, who can access our websites. But beyond that, we have at the district level, we have health educators, we have environmental health staff, whom we share this information with to share with the communities. And for specifically for communities, we have EMIS. Electronic Community Information System, which is rolling out, picking information from the communities, coming directly to the health sector, and knowing what the problems are in the communities and what we can do for them.
So the information is going both
back
ways.
And forth,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, both ways.
So from the, and I told you earlier that I've been speaking with people in the agriculture sector on climate change, speaking with people in infrastructure and so on. And we are seeing that climate change is not something that you handle as one sector alone. It demands collaboration.
Yeah.
So beyond the Met Authority, who else does the ministry collaborate with?
Now, by the nature of climate change, as you have described it, it is cross-cutting. And within this, there is a strategy to work with all the sectors, to work with agriculture. We have talked about nutrition. To work with Ministry of Water, we have talked about environmental determinants of health, that's water, food, air, all those. We work with the Ministry of Water and Environment, the Climate Change Department. We work with even transport and communication, Ministry of Gender, Labor and Social Development. We have a coordination mechanism which is intended to implement this plan, and all these sectors have been asked to identify an officer to join this coordination mechanism so that we work together. We cannot work alone as Minister of Health, because many of the things in health are being handled by other sectors, as I've mentioned, agriculture, water, gender, and so on. So we have to work with them.
As an individual, what worries you the most about what you're seeing on climate change and health?
There are many things that worry me. First of all, the level of environmental protection in Uganda, which drives the climate change, is not yet well managed. Environmental degradation is on the increase. We are seeing wetlands being destroyed, forests being destroyed, dumping of waste almost everywhere, emission of greenhouse gases. Although Uganda produces minimally the greenhouse gases, but we need to reduce even the little, because the little, if Uganda produces a little, another country a little, then it will be a big one. So we need to reduce that. In the health sector, we are already towing that line of reducing emissions. We are promoting the use of solarization of health facilities. And as I talk, over 200 facilities are going to get solar energy to do the refrigerators for vaccines, to do the lighting, and for some to do even the pumping of water. So that is one way of reducing emissions, because globally health sector contributes about 5% of the greenhouse gases. So in Uganda, in the health sector, we are already trying to reduce that so that we are compliant. So if we reduce on the environmental degradation, we reduce on the negative practices that affect the environment, we shall be better in management of climate change.
My final question to you. Usually when people are listening to a podcast, they're listening as an individual. So the thing has to speak to them. If I'm listening to this conversation on climate change and health, how is it my business and what should I do?
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning of this discussion, we are all affected. So we need to take keen interest in the climate change impacts. When there are heavy rains that destroy your crops, and you have got a loan to plant these crops, you'll be mentally depressed. You'll be mentally disturbed. So you never know when that will come to you. So everybody needs to be concerned. If everyone, you move on the roads, if the roads are flooded and you can't cross to do business, it's your business that you should know about climate change. If you are accessing health facilities and these facilities are destroyed, it's your business to know that climate change is going to affect you in one way or another. The landslides in part of our regions, in Kigezi, in Mbale, they may come to you. And indirectly, if a bridge is washed away, you are traveling from one direction to another and the bridge is crossed or is flooded, it will affect you. So in short, we are all susceptible to the climate change impacts. Even the diseases we mentioned, malaria, does not choose one person to another. It is still affecting us. Although there are efforts like the immunization, we now can immunize malaria for the young children against malaria. We hope it is going to be, in the long run, eliminated. But it is driven by climate change, and it can also affect us. So we also need to act to reduce the impacts.
Any final words for us?
I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk to you. I know we always look for opportunities to send out a message. I hope this message will come out to people and inform the health workforce, the health managers, and the general public that climate change affects health, and not only health, all the sectors, agriculture, environment, transport. So we need to be vigilant and do the right things that can reduce the impacts.
Thank you very much, Dr. Namanya, for sharing your insights and expertise with us today. And it's very clear to me from all the conversations I've been having and now also listening to you, there are little things that you've put out that I hadn't even thought about. So it's really critical for all of us to think not just about ourselves, but to think about what this means for our communities. And we do appreciate the work that you're doing and your team to build a resilient health system for Uganda. And thank you for all of our listeners for tuning into this episode of Climate Talk Uganda. Remember, climate change affects all of us, and it's up to each of us to take action. Please stay informed. You said there are bulletins. You said there's information on your website. Read up and know that your health can be impacted. Stay engaged and join us again next time for more discussions on climate and health.
Thank you.